Good afternoon. My name is Joan Keston. I'm the founding attorney at Keston Law, a law firm located in Wilmington, North Carolina. We focus our practice on elder law, estate planning, and asset protection. And in doing that, we do documents such as trusts and wills, powers of attorney, healthcare documents. We do planning for Medicaid benefits for nursing home. We do planning for VA benefits for pension, improved pension, aid in attendance, and housebound. We might do planning for Alzheimer's or dementia client, and we do special needs planning. We're starting this podcast, actually, on a weekly or monthly basis to go over some of the issues that we face, or most of us face, or our clients, we see our clients facing in this area of law. We will be talking it from a legal perspective and also some of the practical issues involved. So we hope that this is something of value to you. It will be posted as well, a link on our website. And if you have any particular questions or topics that you feel like that you would like to have us discuss in this podcast, please feel free to send us an email. It's jkeston@kestonlaw.com. Again, jkeston@kestonlaw.com. Thank you.
So having sat through various seminars that you've conducted, Joan, as well as talked with different potential clients for intake purposes here at Keston Law, a big question that a lot of people end up having is, you know, I'm not a millionaire. I only have a few things to my name. Why would I need any sort of help in protecting assets? So.
Okay, well, we do a lot of asset protection these days for middle-class folks, and the vehicle that is used is either a trust or a limited liability company, and sometimes both. We don't do trust just for wealthy trust babies anymore. Trusts are, and again, the trust varies depending on why we're doing it. So there's not one vanilla or one trust that applies to everybody. It can change based on the purpose of why we're doing one. An example of why we do trusts and asset protection is, let's say we're trying to qualify for Medicaid for nursing home stay. If we have enough time in advance of an eventual nursing home residency, we might be able to do a trust. And what we do is we put all our assets or the assets we're trying to protect into an irrevocable trust. Irrevocable meaning that once you set this trust up, you cannot undo it. For the most part, you can't change things in it. There's certain things you can tweak, but you really can't change a whole lot. But if we structure that trust correctly, and that's what our goal is, then those assets do not count when we're looking at whether or not you qualify for Medicaid. Again, we're protecting those assets from creditors, from the government.
What do you consider assets?
Assets would be your house, any other real estate, your bank account. Your checking account, your brokerage account.
What about a car?
Well, cars are, we don't usually put a car into a trust because it's a little bit different mechanism with insurance and such. So in this kind of trust, I wouldn't necessarily put a car in. You could. A car is an asset that you can have and still qualify for Medicaid.
Okay.
So it's not like you can't put it in, but sometimes it doesn't make sense to.
What about boats?
Again, that could go in for the most part, yeah. And you have to be aware that whatever, how that whole mechanism of that trust works is you're pretty hands-off if you're the one who's going to be doing this to qualify for Medicaid. Again, that's one particular scenario. When we do a trust, there are three parties to a trust: the person who creates the trust, the person then who administers the trust and who takes title to assets in the trust, and then the beneficiary, who's the person for whose benefit the trust is created. Now, in some scenarios with trust, you can be all three of those positions. When we're doing an asset protection trust for Medicaid purposes, you can't be. You can't necessarily be the trustee or the beneficiary of assets. So again, the structure varies. And that's a very specific kind of trust. We do certain kinds of trusts, again, irrevocable, in order to qualify for VA benefits. Those are veterans benefits, let's say, again, for pension, for care, for long-term care kind of goals. We also do trusts that are not irrevocable, that are revocable, meaning you can revoke, change, do whatever. Let's say for our kids, you have children that you'd like to keep the assets protected in a trust for them in case they are married and get divorced, and you don't want the inheritance to be subject to divorce claims. Or your child passes away and there would be inheritance issue from their spouses. You want that money to stay in the family line. So you could set up a trust during your lifetime that you can change and do whatever you want until you pass away. At that point, it becomes irrevocable for, let's say, your son or daughter. For their lifetime, they can't change it because it's irrevocable. But if something happens to them, then it would go on to their children, and we've got some level of protection from any divorce or death. In that case, your children could be their own trustee or not, again, depending on the capacity of the person and what the situation is and whether or not we need creditor protection. So there's, again, a lot of circumstances on how we would develop that trust based on the particular circumstance involved. And that's a very common kind of trust we're doing these days, because most folks, if they don't marry with a prenuptial agreement, there are spouses' claims to assets that are statutory, meaning the statute of the state where you live controls. And a lot of folks want their inheritance to stay in the bloodline. Another example of what we commonly see is if we have a long-term marriage and the worry is that if one passes away, that the surviving spouse would remarry, and then somehow the nest egg that was saved and sweated to create over a joint lifetime then passes on to the second spouse or their kids rather than the kids of the first marriage. A lot of folks are worried about that event. And we, again, there's planning we can do protecting assets for the children of the first marriage or the first spouse to pass away. Those are very common asset protection concerns of middle-class Americans. They don't necessarily have to be wealthy to do that.
So everybody should actually do it then. If they're coming to see you, if they want to keep it, putting things in a trust seems to be the only thing that makes sense.
Well, I think it not always, but I think it makes sense in a lot of circumstances, and I think it's very important in those circumstances. The added benefit of having your assets in a trust is that it avoids probate. Again, we've spoken about probate before. Probate is the process where when someone passes away, the assets are distributed according to a will and debts are paid. There are fees involved with the clerk of court in the county where you live and attorney's fees, and that process can take 6 months to a year if there are no glitches. A trust simplifies that if your assets are in the trust. Now, this is the critical point that folks come into my office and they're so excited they have a trust, and I say, what's in it? And they look at me like dumbfounded. What do you mean, what's in it? Well, if you don't transfer assets into a trust, you've wasted your money because the trust has no functionality. It may be pretty, but there's nothing in it, so it controls nothing. So your trust, when you do a trust, you then actually have to what we call fund a trust. You have to transfer assets into the trust. I've developed my practice so that I actually guide people and make sure people do transfer assets into the trust. Or I can do it myself, but again, I try to have people do it so it avoids costs, and I just make sure they're doing it. So there is an added benefit. Now, if depending on the estate, if there's children and different circumstances would dictate if I think a trust is indicated or not. But I think it's advisable in more circumstances than not, let's say.
Okay.
Some people resist trusts and the asset protection element because the old-fashioned trusts, when we were doing more estate tax purposes, were a little more complex and burdensome. These are not as much so. Now, there's a whole level of trust work beyond this for folks who are not middle class, for folks who have more than $11 million. There's a lot more planning for asset protection, what we call domestic asset protection trusts, or for, let's say, for doctors, people who are in high-risk professions that they're afraid of being sued, that they really do need to protect their assets more. There are more complex asset protection procedures that are much more complex, involve having trusts in different states, and that's not necessarily middle-class planning, but there is asset protection for that level as well. And that's important for those folks that they do that kind of asset protection.
Now, in addition to trusts, you know, there's a lot of middle-class people who are landlords, basically. And I know you've advised people quite oftentimes about developing an LLC to protect certain rental properties and assets of that nature. Can you describe that a little bit more?
Yeah, I would suggest that no one should own property in their own name and rent it, because we live in a litigious society, and if a tenant were to fall and sue you and it's in your name, they could access all your assets. If you keep it in a limited liability company and you actually function as a limited liability, you protect the structure and you do what's required by law, then there's a shield around that, and if there's a lawsuit, then what's at risk is what's in that LLC. In addition, there's a specific kind of litigation process with the LLC that even protects you more than just that barrier. I don't want to go into that because it's a fairly complex litigation type strategy, but there's really great protection on the LLC. I've had clients that have not respected the LLC. They commingle LLC money with their own money, and that basically, when they were sued, it pierced what we call piercing the corporate veil, and they got to the person's assets. So again, not going and getting the right kind of legal counseling, you may think you know everything in the short run, but if something goes wrong, again, your protection might not be valid. So you really do need to understand the structure, and again, it costs little to protect yourself as opposed to the risk if you don't do it right. So the LLC is a really good aspect. Now, if you're doing the maintenance yourself and you're negligent, you may be liable personally for the lack of, you know, the negligent type work you did. So it's not a home free, but it's another layer of protection. The whole point of asset protection, there's no 100% guarantee. What you're doing is making it more and more difficult for someone to get to you. And that's the purpose of asset protection.
Okay, does Medicaid look at your trust?
They may. Again, if it's further than five, it has to be further than 5 years back because of the five-year look-back rule, and the trust would be if it's within the 5 years, it would be a sanctionable transfer. They may, and there are certain circumstances that would trigger their looking at your trust, or they may not. There's a part of calculating for Medicaid called the Community Spouse Resource Allowance. The date that we use for that could be further than 5 years back, so it could tack in to see your trust. So again, it depends on the circumstance whether they see that trust or not.
All right, thank you.
But again, the asset protection is something that we're doing more and more of. In a lot of the estate planning we're doing is more asset protection work than estate tax planning because the estate tax threshold is so high. But it's something that middle-class Americans should be really aware of and take efforts to protect themselves. Thanks for listening. I welcome you to visit our website, www.kestinlaw.com. On that website, you will find our schedule for seminars. We do seminars almost on a monthly basis in two locations where we formally address a lot of the topics we mentioned in this podcast. You also can follow the directions with this podcast. If you have any topics you'd like us to address in a podcast, feel free to write those and send those to us. And if you have any other questions and would like to have any kind of consultation, again, you can either contact us on the website, and our phone number is 910-509-7121. Once again, thanks for listening.